Azadeh Moveni is a longtime Middle Eastern correspondent for Time magazine. An Iranian-American, she's fluent in Farsi and Arabic, and one of the few American correspondents who's worked continuously in Iran since 1999. She's also written two books about her experiences there. First, Lipstick Jihad, and now Honeymoon in Tehran. Steve Paulson spoke with Azadeh Moveni.
When you went back to Iran, one of the first people you looked up was the government minder you call Mr. X, a man who kept tabs on your work as a foreign journalist working in Iran. Why did you feel the need to get in touch with him?
Well, when Iranian journalists do have a minder, they are asked to stay in regular contact with, and it's always him. And so I knew that this was expected of me, and that if I wanted to work, that I had to have his permission, in addition to the permission of the Ministry of Culture, which is, of course, officially in charge of foreign journalists. So I wanted to be safe, and I wanted to be cautious, and make sure that everyone in government who had anything to say about me working was in agreement.
And did he have a lot of power over you?
He certainly did. Iran is a government and a country with multiple centers of power. And sometimes as a journalist, it's bewildering to know all of the different institutions that have power over you. So he certainly would have had a veto right over my ability to work.
Now, the relationship that you describe with Mr. X is really pretty strange, how you would meet in out-of-the-way, slightly dangerous locations. And you say he behaved like a controlling husband. What made those encounters so menacing?
Well, first of all, it was creepy to meet in places that were so secluded. Hotels that, for example, didn't even have an official sign outside marking what they were. Always very secluded, far-off places where you would sort of... It was intentional, of course. I think these kind of places were chosen to make me or other journalists feel very vulnerable, because you felt as though you were going into a place and no one really knew where you were. And if something were to happen, no one would really hear you or be able to find out what had come of you.
And did Mr. X know basically what you were up to from day to day? I mean, did he know who you were talking to and who you were hanging out with?
He certainly did, and he made it a point of conveying that. And much of this, I think, was through just my phone being tapped as well, because I didn't certainly tell him everything that he knew. He had much of it from other sources. And I think that was also part of the whole dynamic, was to make certain that I knew that I was being listened to.
This was your cell phone?
Probably my cell phone, my house phone. You know, in Iran, it's anyone who is engaged in anything considered sensitive by the government assumes that their phones are tapped. So no one in Iran will really sit down and have an open conversation on the phone if they're involved in anything the government considers dangerous.
And your relationship with Mr. X was pretty typical of all foreign journalists who were working there?
No, foreign journalists don't usually have this kind of relationship with a minder. They're not monitored in this way.
Oh, so you were not considered a foreign journalist then. You were considered an Iranian journalist.
That's how I was treated, because they would certainly never do this to a full-fledged American or a European working for an American or European publication. It's Iranian journalists have to go through this, and Iranian journalists who work for the Western media in this way are treated like Iranians, yes.
Even though you are an American citizen, I presume.
I am, but many of us, like me, have dual nationality. So we go into Iran on our Iranian passports, and so we are not treated as Americans or whatever else we might be when we're in the country.
Now, I have to say, when I read your book and when I've read other things about Iran, I have trouble figuring out who really has power. I mean, clearly the conservative clerics have a lot of power, but what I find puzzling is how that power is actually exercised in daily life, because it seems not exactly haphazard, but you can get into trouble, but you can also get away with a lot of stuff.
Iran is an opaque place. I mean, most of the things that people, especially young people, will do in the course of their daily life, whether it's listening to Western music or dating or all of the things young people do, a lot of this is all technically illegal. Most of the time, these laws are not enforced. But Iran is It's very mercurial. You know, 1 month the government might crack down and young people or women will find themselves, you know, maybe being stopped on the street for what they're wearing, or there'll be a knock at the door and police will come to take your satellite dish away from the roof. But then there will be months and months where you can go ahead and do all of this. It just, Iran is sort of a place where you can't quite predict when things are going to be enforced.
You said dating is illegal?
It is. It is in the proper sense. I mean, premarital sex is certainly illegal, and it is not permitted to be in the company of a man or a woman who's not your immediate relative. You can be stopped at a checkpoint, for example, you know, on a Friday evening, and if you're a young man or a young woman sitting in the car together and you can't prove that you're not immediate family, that can be something that's grounds for different kinds of punishment.
So this is all about what can be seen in public. I mean, there's a very sharp division between what you can do out among other people and what you do behind closed doors.
That's the heart of it. There's a public and private divide in Iran between, you know, who you can be and how you can behave inside as opposed to outside in public.
And how do most people respond to that divide?
It's something that especially young people, it's all they've known. And so they've become very accustomed to having this double life. I think it takes a psychological and an emotional toll, and it's very hard on young people because I think it's hard to sort of craft an identity when you're not quite sure, you know, who you are. And that's why when there are politicians in power or moderates who try and sort of ease this divide and allow young people to behave in public the way that they do in private, that's something that young people are very eager for, that they can be honest and be themselves outside and not live in this sort of split world.
Now, the other big piece of your book, Honeymoon in Tehran, is how you met a man in Tehran, how you fell in love and moved in together and discovered that you were pregnant. That's a pretty dicey situation, isn't it?
It could have been, and I was very worried that it would be. But I was very surprised by people's reactions. You know, along the way, if you're a pregnant woman, you have to disclose that at different instances. And I found people very understanding and relaxed about it and not at all judgmental. And even people in positions of authority, when we were getting our marriage license, for example, and I had to tell people, it was just really reflective, I think, of how secular and liberal Iranians have become socially and culturally, sort of in contrast to their government.
That's so interesting, because certainly that's not the image that we have here, that there is this large secular strain within the country.
I do think that that's one of the ways in which Iran is really still misunderstood. It's certainly a nation in which the majority have a secular attitude toward politics. They're very open to the West. They've come to be very modern.
You write about how you, as at one point at least, as an unmarried pregnant woman, were careful about concealing this news. And what potentially were the dangers?
Well, for example, premarital sex can be punished by flogging and heavy fines. You know, that is the worst case scenario.
Does that actually happen much?
Very rarely. But you never know, and I think that the anxiety is something that young people always have to live with, and I think that it makes them very stressed, and there are high rates of depression and suicide in Iran, and I think that reflects just the anxiety of not knowing, you know, might this happen to me one time?
Now, you ended up getting married. Why did you and your husband and your young son end up leaving Iran?
Well, we had started to think about leaving once we had a child, because raising a family, raising children in Iran is very challenging. You know, I've had friends who are raising children, and it's sort of a constant battle with, you know, the government and their teachers at school, who very much still, you know, are forced to teach very ideological, religious things to children. And your kid comes back home from school and says, well, Mommy, you're immoral because you don't wear a veil, you know, in front of my uncle, you know, things like this. And you're competing, I think, all the time, you know, in teaching values to your children. And it was not something that we wanted to have to do. And Iran had taken a very dark turn under Ahmadinejad. So we just decided in time that, you know, we thought that we would raise a family elsewhere.
Azadeh Moveni now lives with her family in London. She talked with Steve Paulson about her book, Honeymoon in Tehran.